Subcommittee on the Judiciary, May 17th, work session, 3 p.m., room 346.
Would you like to take the floor, sir?
How about administrative inspection?
Oh, no, what?
Yeah, I'd go for that one.
You want? Are we all for that?
What was this?
Administrative inspection.
220.
One of those people, those public came down with a dollar to that.
Would you really like to get some on the bill?
461.
Yeah.
Everybody yelled at it.
Well, let's just go through the book.
Why waste time worrying about tabling bills we don't like? Let's talk about bills that we really need. They can sit there dormant by themselves without our paying any attention to them. We don't have to help them in being dead. It's kind of like jumping on the body. What was the thing that was a wind?
Shoot the wounded when they come down the hill.
Was that wind guard or was that wired?
It sounds like a wireism to me.
Shoot the wounded after the battle was over.
After the battle was over, shooting the wounded as you kept on.
The one thing is, I think there's a certain advantage to letting folks know if a bunch of people have come down a bill and you've heard it and then you don't take action. I think it leaves an impression that maybe they still have a chance.
Yeah, but then it wastes a lot of time going through and getting people all upset. You offend people. Why add insult to injury? I'll be right back.
Bill 2.
Right.
Maybe I ought to vote with him on Senate Bill 2. Let's get somebody together here.
First, we will take up 879.
He wouldn't have been with that bill.
879?
879.
No, but I trust the chairman.
Oh.
God, no, he wouldn't do that.
We were just trying to figure out if that was, wasn't it you that suggested that you shoot the wounded on the return back from the battle?
Everybody else.
Who was it? Who used that expression? Was that you?
No.
Who was it? Who was it you used that?
Diana, does this bill need any amendments?
Yes. Since I didn't draw until a little bit ago, this sort of considered it, so they...
879?
There were some amendments drafted, two of them in fact, that were proposed by some of the advocates of this bill. The First Amendment was proposed in Section 4.
Is in our packet?
No, because I didn't know that we were going to do this.
Steve, isn't this bill you asked me to bring up?
Yeah.
879?
Cook's bill.
I agree. You want to take it up tomorrow and give Diana to fill tomorrow to work on it? We're going to have work session tomorrow, aren't we?
Yep. All right, is that better for you, Diana?
You going to be here tomorrow, Vern?
Yeah, I think it'd be better for the committee. That way I can have these amendments.
Okay, 2207.
Why do you ask such a question like that?
Thought you might be celebrating the victory of Senate Bill of...
2172.
House Senate Judge Resolution 7.
Was he sponsoring that? I mean, is he supporting that?
He came out of his committee.
Right. He's a German.
He voted for the minority report.
On what?
No, he didn't.
SJR 7.
No, he didn't.
I didn't vote for the minority.
Anybody heard how the voter turnout is today?
You would have. You signed on it.
I signed in order as a senatorial courtesy to Senator Wingard so that he could have an opportunity to present his minority report.
Didn't you speak against it before?
Spoke against minority report.
Did you?
After having pointed out what a nice guy I was, having...
Senator Kaporian had such a halo idea about you that he attributed good things to you that weren't even true.
All right, Diana, have you fixed this bill?
Yes, Madam Chairman, you...
That's where the precedent...
You'll find a rewrite of the Ingram Council 2207.
Okay. And this takes care of the problems that were raised to make this... Is this the one that had to be made,
Put in neutral language. The first section, while Senator Carson expressed his concern,
Which one are we on?
As long as we were making the bill as equally as one, we ought to neutralize the language, and I've done that. By using the word person instead of his, or that person's spouse, instead of his spouse.
What
What did I hear the other day we'd done about putting spouses in the language?
Putting spouses.
Everybody here ought to read Opus 21 by Philip Wiley. All this business about, you know, his, hers, its, so on. And that talks about the importance of words. You know, Opus 21, some guy skywrote a foul four-letter word. So bad. So everybody absolutely that. And we're so obsessed with his and hers and so on.
Well, you'd be obsessed if everywhere there is a he, there was a her.
Womb man is just a man with a womb. Don't know your last. Perfectly legitimate. Is her. It's been used lately because of.
And per son is a son with a what?
Inferior.
We're on 2207. The chair moves the amendments. Discussion. Is there any objection?
Just a minute.
How does this change the present law, really?
Diana.
How does it change the present law?
The present law deals with the liability of a husband for a wife's death, and we are changing law to provide that both spouses will be equally liable, particularly for the maintenance and education of children. The bill is originally amended before you. It says that after the separation of one spouse from the other, neither spouse shall be responsible for death. At the public hearing, the committee expressed the idea that they thought that neither spouse should be responsible for death contracted by the other at any time during the marriage and not just after a separation had occurred.
Sounds good.
How was this again? I don't understand. Now, the present common law, is it not? The present common law makes spouses liable for the family purpose debt, does it not?
Makes the husband liable.
No, wife too, doesn't it? I don't think there is. Present common law is really applies both ways, does it not?
The present statutory law, which is in section 2 of the original bill, says that both husband and wife are liable for household expenses and particularly the expenses of the family and the education of the children. Both spouses are jointly liable for that.
At the present time,
at the present time, and we are not changing that point in this amendment. As to other deaths, personal deaths for, say, clothing or something, we are amend the law to say that neither spouse shall be liable for the debts of the other, which are not family or household expenses.
Okay, so neither spouse will be liable. Are they now, you think? Is the husband now, you think?
Yes. Under the current law, which we're amending that, ORS 108040, the husband can be responsible for the debts of his wife, but the current law says that the wife doesn't have to be responsible for her husband's death. And
what are non-household related debts? That's what I was giggling about.
Well, I suppose personal clothing, perhaps.
Pants. I was thinking condoms.
All right, now, would this allow the wife or husband, respectively, to contact, to send the child to
that's very much
Reed College or Harvard or Willamette? Even though Portland State were available, and then even though the spouse did not consent,
I never take
that the spouse
that
could be liable for that?
Yes, under the current law and under our amendment, both the husband and wife would be still jointly liable for educational expenses for children. We're not changing
reasonable educational expenses? Or where is that language in the present law?
Let's see. If we look on page 2 of the engrossed of the printed bill,
108040, the expenses of the family and the education of the children
are charged to the husband and wife, or either of them, and in relation
thereto,
they may be sued jointly or separately.
Now, if one person has a car,
we're not
changing that. Yes. If there is a family car, then they would both be liable for the expenses. But if a person, if there were two cars.
If there were a two-car family, they both would be liable.
It would depend on whether or not that was a household or a family vehicle, family expense. joint ownership. So if the title's in only one name, then that's...
Will the title be determined to?
Well, if the title's in only one name, it's that person's property.
It'd be that person's stuff.
And no right of survivorship. And no right of survivorship only comes into play if that person dies.
Well,
I'm just concerned about the move in recent years, you know, for women to be able to get credit without on their own, you know, on their own merits, without concern for whether single or married or such. And it seems to me if the husband's not going to be responsible for many of these charges, unless of course the charge of your account is based upon a contract where both become jointly and severally liable, it's going to tend to put a pall on that type of effort on the part of women to kind of get equal credit opportunities.
It's my opinion, I'm somewhat familiar with that kind of law for married women in their own names, and I don't think that changing this would put a pall on it. I don't know that the stores have to grant a married woman credit in her own name unless she has independent financial resources. They don't give her credit in her own name if she's solely reliant upon her husband's income.
Typically, you know, she carries a car with her husband's name on it, which is insult on injury. But of course, in that situation, both husband and wife are signed, and it's a matter of contract, not a matter of law.
Well,
Charles moved the amendments. Is there any objection to the amendments? What's your pleasure with the bill?
I'm
going
to do pass.
Motion is to send it out. New pass is amended.
Go ahead, discussion.
Okay.
Is there anything in this bill that would be subject to the challenge that it allows avoidance of debt that is now allowed in the current law? You say the man is responsible for all of his wife's debts now.
Correct.
I'm just trying to anticipate the credit. Is any member of the financial community going to see some problem in this? I'm a fearless defender of their interests, as you all know.
Do you mean defective data?
For deaths hereafter occurred.
Might be a good idea to put an effective date, because it might not be clear as to, not necessarily an effective date, but a statement to the effect that these changes shall only apply for those debts contracted on or after the effective date of this act. Mm-hmm. And if we want to have an effective date, I don't know if there's any reason why. Wally would probably say, if he were here, to make it effective January 1, 1978. Maybe we ought to do that too, so then everyone is aware, or theoretically aware.
Why don't we have an effective date?
January 1, 1978 effective date, and also in another amendment saying that this shall only apply to debts incurred subsequent to January 1, 1978.
Discussion of the amendment. Is there any objection? The amendment's adopted then. The motion is due pass as amended.
No. Okay. Madam Chairman, on page 2. Diana, you've got three hises in section 3, and I think you can change that. On line 8, you could,
yes.
Every married person at the time of the marriage, or at the time of marriage.
Okay,
or afterward.
Oh, miss, that one on 9.
So, well, I know, I'm trying to figure that one out. You figure that one out. Afterwards. Or afterwards acquired, including real or personal property acquired
by the person on labor.
Yeah.
One on 11 too.
Right, and then there you can say of the spouse.
Get all these pinned up frustrations.
That's part of the.
Don't the women.
Ooh, yeah. It's so simple once you fall into it.
I didn't want to mention this on the floor, but in terms of equality, I know there's a certain anatomical inequality about going to the bathroom, but.
Which is in the.
I think we discussed that one at length.
We discussed it enough. It just seems to me that you ought to be able to get your your drawers down and back up as fast as a man now.
No. I suggested in jumpsuits you put the old-fashioned flap in back to the buttons.
That's what, I was thinking something along that line.
Clerk, call the roll on the bill. Yes, it was a part of the amendment before that.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Cook. Kefouri.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Robert.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. 2208.
In line 11, you might have to say the other spouse. I don't know. You better check that so it reads right.
Does this one need any amendments, Diana? This is a house amendment in here.
Yes, there's already a house amendment, and it does not need further amendment. You should see in the work package a short summary and effect of this bill, prepared by Barb, and the committee wants to review that.
What's your pleasure with the bill?
I'm getting by. What bill is that?
2208.
Is that in your 2208?
No, that's an explanation. The bill's in your book.
Subject has to work for execution by general purpose. Could I have a minute on that?
Sure.
Subject to execution.
That's what the explanation says.
Yeah, I thought
you have to bring a creditor's bill.
Yeah, they have to, in order to reach an equitable, they have to bring a separate creditor's bill.
Discussion.
Well, this, if we pass this, it'll make it easier for creditors to go after.
2208, Vern.
Somebody's buying a house on a contract, they can. If they've got developed some equity, then they can attach that equity and then force them to sell the house.
Currently, a creditor can, where someone is buying a house under a mortgage, they have a legal interest in the creditor who is that.
Because we have a title theory state and mortgage. And you force them to sell it at a sheriff's sale. Like a forced
unless the homestead is subject to exemption, which they often are. There's often a in Oregon law that $12,000 homestead can be
automatic or must it be applied for?
They can use it as defense, so to speak, instead of if they bring an action. As part of the action. If you sue someone then they get that as a set-off. The judge won't allow more than that. You don't have to even plead it out. I think one thing that's different here is that people who buy houses with very low down payments, which tends to be a lot of people who don't have a lot of money, a lot of the spec houses are bought on contracts. They're more frequently used by the moderate income people.
And so land, raw land.
This would be a vehicle to get at. I think a lot of creditors don't really try and get at it. They don't use this creditor's bill in equity.
To further discussion on the new pass motion.
Who's requests the Oregon State Bar? Who testified on this?
Richard Owens. No.
Boyd Long.
Boyd Long. Is there further discussion?
Were there any, was there any opposition testimony?
No, there was no opposition. Clerk call the roll on 2208, A and Girls.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Do you know what it is,
Corey?
Brian?
Aye. Is it that same bill we were voting on?
Mm-hmm.
Wire.
Which?
Equitable interest.
Equitable interest. 2208.
Everybody else vote for that?
Mm-hmm.
Let me withdraw my vote. I'm kind of over there.
So this is the 50 mile. Well,
wait just a minute.
Bill.
49.
I'm sorry.
The 49er bill.
Makes it easier for creditors to get at equitable interest.
Alright, let's try it again. Clerk call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Cook.
No.
Kefouri.
Aye.
Wire.
No.
Roberts.
No, until I get some more explanation.
Brown.
Aye, the bill fails. 2211. There's no 2211 in my book.
How can you get an equitable interest in property that's being purchased on contract?
My list
your
says
equity.
2211.
You get, when you get more, you've paid
right.
off more than your homestead
oh,
exemption.
Which one is on the agenda? Are there amendments needed to 2211?
This was a bill that the city had passed out a long time, and Senator Myers was scheduled to carry it on the floor, and Senator Frank Roberts had some concerns.
That it wasn't parallel to the personal representative, so
yeah,
this makes it parallel.
Yeah.
Chair moves the amendments. Is there any objection?
No.
The amendments passed, then what's your pleasure with the bill?
Do pass.
Aye.
Senator Roberts moves it out. Do pass as amended.
Yes, I don't have a bill in my book, but
the amendment would be the bill then.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's all right.
Clerk call the roll.
Section one's missing.
W. Brown.
Passed out.
Cook.
It's a good one.
Aye.
It's here. It's back.
Wires.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Cook.
What's the bill?
2211.
It, oh no, I lost the bill.
Unfaithful.
It's,
reason to believe that such a person will be unfaithful.
To act as guardians or conservators, that they have the same qualifications as a personal representative has.
That seems reasonable. No
Cook votes aye and the bill passes.
I'd be glad to carry it again.
Right?
Thank you.
2269.
This is just to say that you.
Any amendments?
No, there were no amendments.
Looks like a good bill.
There is a short explanation in the work packet.
What's your pleasure with the bill?
What's it all about?
It's a good bill.
Well, is the why are we necessarily allowing attorney's fees here when we don't allow it in other states? What's the rationale?
What bill is it? We
2269. Stan Allison's bill. Well,
my understanding that in two types of tax cases we allow attorney's fees in the tax court, but in two types we don't. I'm not sure which are which, but there's a gift of state income and property, but in half of those we do. Do we allow this particular type of tax case to result in attorney's fees for the winning taxpayer before the tax court, where this is only applying to the Supreme Court?
Yes, we do. If you look down on line 22 as well, that the current law already
tax court, right.
The tax court has made a redetermination that our contribution is lower than the Department of Revenue assessment. The tax court can allow fees. What we're adding here is that if that redetermination of the tax is made by the Supreme Court,
right,
which is the tax court, they can also allow attorneys.
So inheritance must be one of those two types, but we have two types that are missing from the attorney's fees now.
But the bill that we're considering tomorrow, the inheritance tax bill, will amend that in. And the gift and inheritance tax will be the same, and there'll be provisions in there for.
For gifts tomorrow?
Yeah, that's not the $2 to $5 million.
For gift?
Gift. Gift and inheritance, they're being combined.
Inheritance here.
Is this a lawyer's bill? Oh, Betty isn't here.
All bills involving lawyers are lawyers' bills if you're against them.
Sort of looks a little bit like a lawyer's bill.
Yes.
Is there a reason why this cannot be amended into the inheritance tax bill while we have that separate bill?
The ordinance is talking about a different subject, which should deal with
what's your pleasure with the bill?
I move to get the bill out and do pass.
Senator Cook moves it out and do pass. Discussion? Clerk call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
There's one teacher here.
Cook.
Aye.
Kefouri.
Aye.
Aspire, aye.
Betty Roberts. Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Wires.
No.
You already know.
Yeah, may have a minority report.
$2,271.
Would you vote it out, if, just to get it out of the way, if you send it out without recommendation?
It's gone, Heather.
You got it out, you got the vote.
No, I haven't.
Sure you did.
One, two, three, four. We need your vote.
There's five. Did you vote no?
So we need.
Oh, bill fails then.
But I'll move it out without recommendation.
No, I won't accept the vote.
No what?
The bill fails.
Welfare for the rich.
Oh.
$2,270.
I know a few canards myself.
Well, that's true. That sure is probably a canard.
That is.
They have a trickle down.
Can we hear the fact there's an order?
It's sure not based on logic or reason.
My trickle very deep.
What's the bill now?
$2,270. There's an explanation in work tax.
This is another one of Stan Allison's, isn't it? Yes.
What is this? What was confusing about it before?
I believe that the confusing language was the language that was being on line 19 to 21 of the bill.
So, what will be the effect of this if we adopt it? If we adopt this, how will it be different than it says?
Under the present law, it's confusing as to when a successor personal representative takes over, it's whether or not the creditors get another full 4 months on top of the period that they already had from the time that the original personal representative was appointed and the time that a successor personal representative was appointed. The intent of the bill as amended is to allow only a period of 4 months for all creditors to present claims to the estate, regardless of whether or not we have a successor personal representative.
Just as simple as that. I move the bill out to pass.
Discussion? Clerk call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Kefouri.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. The bill passes.
Madam Chairman, in about 5 minutes, I need to go to this, want to go to the State and Federal Affairs Committee to hear something. Is there someone else you can round up?
Betty Roberts. Send somebody, Harriet, to get Betty Roberts.
Why don't you move that committee down into the hearing rooms in the light of the day?
It is. In the hearing room B today.
2271.
Not in color.
What are you hearing?
51, my Fox's big deal to allow more booze to be sold, more bars, bigger and better bars. Road, change the ratio from one to five. And this particular bill would take off the fraternities and so on, that'd give them about another 135.
You have an amendment to this?
Yes, Madam Chairman, in the works packet, you'll see an amendment to House Bill 2271. Now, here's the Robert.
I take off all of them myself. 2271?
Yes.
How does this differ from the present law?
Under the present law, when the specific powers of a conservator or personal representative are set out in the statute, there is nothing which specifically says that a conservator or personal representative may sue on behalf of the interested person or the decedent for personal injury claims or any other tort or contract claim. And if the personal representative or the conservator wishes to bring suit on behalf of their interested person, they must go back to the court and get a separate court order.
No, 2271.
And this is always granted, but this bill would, by enumerating it in their powers, delete the requirement, remove the requirement, but they have to keep going back to court to get permission to bring a suit on behalf of their ward or the decedent.
By putting in the guardian, did you check the guardian ad litem?
Well, the guardian ad litem is a separate provision. What we're, this was, I believe, Senator Betty Roberts' concern that since we had added the power to the personal representative and conservators, we ought to also give someone who's been appointed a guardian of a minor.
Oh, Molly Carson's too, and did you check the guardian ad litem to see what happens when we do this?
I don't believe anything happens there. A guardian ad litem is appointed in a situation where a minor is injured and does not have a specific guardian.
Really has not much of anything to do with this.
No, it really doesn't. This is in a case where you've got an orphan who has a legal guardian rather than a parent of a minor who's appointed a guardian ad litem for purposes of one lawsuit.
Chair would move the amendments. Discussion? Is there any objection?
I'll move it out.
Move out to pass as amended. Discussion? Clerk call roll.
Cook?
Aye.
Capori?
Aye.
Wired?
Aye.
Roberts?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
W. Brown?
Aye, 2271.
The bill passes. All right, fine, thank you. 2207. Other amendments?
2207, Madam Chairman, that was the first bill. We did, we've done that one. That was that first one, allowing the, saying that the husband and wife are equally liable or neither is liable for private debt.
All right, 2274.
This bill amends the Small Estates Act, and there is an explanation of the bill in the work packet.
Did I skip a bill?
Yes, 2212, we've also skipped, which has no amendment.
Okay. 2274.
What did you just say? I was talking to my old lady going.
We're on House Bill 2274.
Isn't it?
It increases the amount.
Lockup in there, or is it just an explanation?
It's just an explanation.
I thought we were on 2207, 2274. increasing the amount that doesn't have to be probated?
Yes.
It's a popular bill.
Didn't her party say this? No, there was that elderly gentleman was here, said it was a good idea, that it's worked in this kind of...
Stan Ellison.
Yeah.
What's your pleasure?
Move it out.
It passed as amended.
The amendment, Madam Chairman, $10,000 for,
It's the House amendment. The Senate hasn't amended it.
We do need to make one amendment, on page 3. We got a note from the House Judiciary Committee that on line 3 of page 3, the word, heir should be devisee, where a person dies testate.
Chair, so moves the amendment. Is there any objection? Amendment adopted. The motion is due pass. Discussion.
I'm all in favor of...
Clerk, call the roll.
Is anything...
Dudley Brown.
Aye.
Sifori.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. The bill passes. 2212.
There is an explanation of that in the work packet.
John Holloway testified on it, and Doug Minson testified on it. Evidently, they want it out from the Law Improvement Committee. Chair, move it out.
How do those two articulate now?
The Bar Committee is a part of the Law Improvement Committee.
They don't want to be.
Right.
Their explanation is that they have many more specialized committees which can give better help to the Law Revision Committee.
Chair, move it out and do pass.
They're still going to be there. They're still in bar, still going to be there.
Well, is this Law Improvement Committee, is that the one that, that Tim... Yeah. Can anyone help me understand that group? It's got, is that the one that has on it Senator Bowe's lawyer?
Well, they're doing the evidence code now. I don't know who's on it.
Well, are they the ones that brought in the bill in agriculture?
Yes.
That committee has some strange political things about it. I don't understand that. This is supposed to come down. It's probably...
I was last time, right?
It's got the lawyer that handled suing me on one thing.
Bob Jordan?
Yeah.
Do you want to let the bill go?
Well, if there's anything I can do to help those folks, I'd like to, but I don't see how I can with the bill.
You can eliminate the Law Improvement Committee.
It made me uneasy when they came in with a bill in agriculture, which I thought was a very good bill, and they weren't able to clearly make the committee understand kind of what they were and where they were coming from at all. It may have been because of one of the members of the committee that was affecting one of his interests, maybe didn't have anything to do with the composition of the committee. So.
Chair, move the bill. Is there any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dudley Brown.
Aye.
Sifori.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Madam Chairman, before you bang down.
Aye.
One more second on 2274. That's back to the small estates. At 10,000 personal or 10,000 real, but not less than an aggregate of 10,000. Was there some reason why we didn't go to an aggregate of 20,000?
Yeah, Stan Ellison thought it would cause problems with titles.
Committee on the Judiciary work session, May 25th, 1977, room 346.
2170.
CSC would have to, you know, get a hold of me.
Do you want these charts back up for 2170? Committee has a small chart in front of me.
Is there a small chart in here?
Yeah, there's a small chart in the one packet.
Fucking people.
This, bill came from the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Donna, do you want to explain it briefly? There, these charts are in your folder.
If you want to follow along, you can sit here. This bill, what essentially does is revises the assault laws to clear up some strange anomalies that are currently in the law, particularly discrepancies in penalties. The chart on the top is what the assault laws would look like under this bill, and the second page is what the existing law looks like if you chart it out. And what the bill is trying to do is scale the penalty with the seriousness of the injury and whether or not the injury was inflicted with a weapon.
Are any amendments needed to it?
No, there are none. I think that it works pretty well. And I think when we had the district attorney here explaining it, most of the committee members understood where the problems were in the bill, in the old law, and how the bill currently, the current bill corrects those.
Wally, this is going to be your baby. Any questions?
You mean I get the crook stick to carry it across the floor? Well, let's see. Does heighten my interest in the bill considerably.
Yeah.
No, but I'm not going to use the chart on the floor. I can show you that. No, I think I'm satisfied with it. Sure, everybody else is. Yeah, that's what I want to learn.
Anyone have any questions? Is there a motion? Senator Carson moves. Also, about 2170 to the floor to pass.
Is Donna letting
the public tenure in front?
Jim Henning, public
defender. Yeah. He supports that. Jim Brown is on the end of the
code. Who's
that? Jim Henning's public defender's office.
Yeah. Okay, he worked on the code. How about Don Follett? Did he make that
Don? Don hasn't said anything to
me. Would you mind calling me?
I'll call Don.
Quick call the roll.
Harrison?
Aye.
Safari?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Robert?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. Senate Bill 906.
There are some amendments in your work folder. Do you want to pull those
mm-hmm.
in?
I'm trying to get them on to
okay.
Or try to soon as I need to come up with the four.
You bet. I'm sorry, which one?
906.
906. Which I can't find.
Why am I here?
Okay. This is quite a bit of correspondence.
What are we going to do with 904?
We passed that out. Well, you're going to have probably Monday.
Has everybody else got 906?
Yeah, you're probably looking in the passed out.
Oh.
No, we never passed that out.
No, but I was looking for 906 right behind 904, and then I was informed by Senator Kapoor we had passed out 904, and I looked, and I was in a tab called passed out, so I figured, other than being perhaps appropriate.
Okay, I found it. Did everybody else go? What's the amendment, then?
Well, the amendment is to page 6 of the bill. lines 33 to 35. On line 33, we're deleting or municipal. On line 34, court. And on line 35, we're putting a period after 133.140 and deleting the rest of the line and deleting judge who issues it at the top of page 7. That's to, apparently when the bill was originally drafted, the legislative council did not completely understand the instructions, and that, with that amendment, it puts it back to its original intent of the bill.
Chair, I'll move the amendment. Discussion? Any objection? Amendment passes. Do you want to go through the bill briefly?
All right. This is a bill to conform the powers of municipal courts to the powers of other municipal courts, which currently have justice of the peace powers. Some of our municipal courts in the state have justice of the peace powers under their legislative charters, and some do not. And it seems to be something of an inconsistency in the law to allow some municipal courts to issue warrants for offenses committed within the territorial jurisdiction of that court and not allow other municipal courts that same power.
Discussion? The chair will move the bill out. Do pass as amended. Is there a discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Is this a bill that we had up here before that where there's some question about whether we wanted the judge in Astoria to be able to put out civil process on a person in Burns that had gotten a $5 ticket going through there? And
that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to put it that way, but that's the bill.
Of course, I would worry about the other way around.
And judges in some cities already have that power. Cities which...
And this is to make it uniform.
Yeah.
Cities what?
Cities which have justice of the peace powers under their legislative charters. And not all municipal courts still have such charter powers.
Well, but there are many who do, are there?
Okay.
There are not many that do, are there?
Good
Ringle knows on that.
No, I think if I can address that question to the people who really know the answer to that, I can get you the answer. You know how many cities currently have this power?
I'm not certain that it would be any city incorporated prior to 1906, which received legislative charter, which I understand is a fairly good number of cities, less than 50%, but still in a pretty large number.
If I can address myself to it also, that is not...
State your name, please.
Bill Ringle. It's not known for sure, and it's sometimes reluctantly exercised because the issuing warrant from, say, the court of Canby is an example. The sheriff of Clackamas County historically wouldn't serve it because he wasn't positive that the city of Canby had that power, and he was concerned that he would get sued if he served their warrant. And this is true in other parts of the state. Some parts of the state, I think Marion County, some of the cities here will give them to the Marion County Sheriff, and he will serve them. There's an additional reason for passing this other than to conform these courts, and I think it's an important reason, if I might mention it.
Very briefly, please.
Okay. If a person is picked up for driving while suspended, lodged in jail, say, on a Friday night, if they're picked up by a district or cited in a district court, they will normally be released on their own recognizance. A city is reluctant to do that because they don't have any power to pick that person up if he doesn't show up in court. We have no warrant power to bring him in, so we leave him in jail all weekend because we know he'll be there. Well, it's not fair to the citizen who's picked up because we can't do anything further to that guy if he doesn't show up. He hasn't posted any bail. His license is already suspended, and that's the only other power we have, is suspended license. You can't kill him twice, so he gets away. And that's true with drunk drivers, too. So we can suspend their license. We can't bring them in to give them the opportunity to have the option to go to the rehabilitation, alcohol rehabilitation. So really what it does, it will relieve the pressure on the defendant that gets picked up and allow him to be released by these city courts on his own recognizance, because we know that if he doesn't show the court, we can bring him back. Those are two good examples.
Is there further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Harrison?
Aye.
Pecori?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Wires?
No.
Betty Roberts?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. Bill passes. Senate Bill 2. Betty, you want to pass?
Who?
Surprise.
Not on the agenda. It's a 24-hour notice, Madam Chairman.
Thank you kindly.
Lee has prepared an amendment which appears on the top of the bill. Most of the concern on the floor seemed to be that under the court's right to obtain treatment for the child, that there might be a raid on the general fund. And the effect of the amendment is to limit that and make sure that there is no raid on the general fund. The chair would move the amendment. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? Any further amendments?
Want a motion?
Yes, please.
Move Senate Bill 2 to the floor again.
Have amended. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
My daughter is different.
Harrison?
Aye.
Pecori?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
Wires?
Probably.
Betty Roberts?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
That's 51%, you understand, from Senator Wires.
More likely than not.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
30-31.
Something has come to my attention that I'm very concerned about, and that's Senate Bill 361. We're voting on whether or not municipal judges can subpoena and get people that have traffic tickets and all kinds of things. We've considered in here this year that have been of less than earth-shaking significance, and now a bill comes out of the Trade and Economic Development Committee, which maybe has some of the most profound ramifications in administrative law that come down the pike in some time. One, I've just gotten a hold of a copy of the bill, but I noticed one of the changes. Some of this has been in the newspaper already. How I find out what's going on in the legislature. One of them says that an agency is engaging in a legislative activity when adopting, amending, or repealing rules, and therefore its decision need not be based upon or supported by an evidentiary record. And I'm very concerned that this might go to the Senate floor without having any discussion in the Senate Judiciary Committee. I would feel like this would be an emasculation of this committee. I don't know the neuter word for that, but
I've been trying to think of one for a long time.
Yeah.
That I am would going have to get
no
the
bounds.
Bill brought to judiciary, but I certainly would encourage anybody else that wants to see it come here try it.
Well, I'd like to ask for an almost unanimous resolution from this committee requesting that.
You don't want it.
Well, yeah, I'd love to have it. I really would.
I'm worried about it.
Is that in the form of a motion?
Yes.
Okay.
Senate
Bill 361 makes some changes in the administrative procedure law.
Where is it? It's come out of the Trade and Economic Development Committee.
And the thrust of it is that any party has to make their case in the contested administrative hearing, that they can't come in later, and they have to have appeared at the agency hearing.
And they can't be just an ordinary citizen either. They have to have some
interest. They have to have an interest, and the agency decides if there's an interest.
No finding
at a hearing.
And no finding of fact is required. to base a rule change on.
Well,
says
you mean
no,
it's about to hit the floor, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm afraid it's about to hit the floor, yes.
It's still in the committee.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I heard
the chairman asked before.
Why don't I go and ask Doug Hyder to not build Pebble Springs too rapidly?
That's what it's all
How's
about.
That for
That's
a glancing answer?
That's what it's all about.
Because I
Pebble
don't...
Springs?
Mm-hmm. It's to tear apart our whole structure of administrative procedures so we can get it, the nuclear plant we want to build in Eastern Oregon.
How else are we going to build it?
Well, we can build
it. I like
it.
The way you think.
When you eliminate the legislature.
There are two issues here. One is Pebble Springs, another one is the orderly process of government. And when you set up a procedure and then there's a ballot measure to say the question whether... anyway.
Well, have you asked the chairman yet?
No. I was told it was out of committee already.
Well,
it might
no,
be
no.
hitting. So that's new information to me.
Jim Redden's explanation when he put it in was that it was the only title that was available, and he expressed his opinion that it might, maybe should go to judiciary, but it's not out of the committee.
What do you mean by the only title of the bill?
Bill title. There's some case that he was trying to conform to. It's in the last advance sheets, and I haven't read it.
The Marbet.
This would have eliminated Marbet from the hearing that the lawsuit that the Attorney General lost in the Supreme Court was based on.
Well, that was deciding counsel to us.
Yeah.
Marbet was one of the people who brought that.
Yes,
this
yeah,
bill would have eliminated
yeah,
Marbet from having been able to do that in the first place. And the bill is drafted by the Attorney General who represented the losing side.
Well, as I understand the motion, it's a motion to send a letter to the President asking him to put a subsequent referral on 361 to judiciary.
Oh, well, or to ask the Chairman first.
Chairman wouldn't do it without the President's.
Wouldn't he?
But we don't want, I don't want us to be end running the Chairman. So if
he
said that we
were
violating somebody's
I mean.
Senatorial respect and all that.
Well, do you want to restate the motion then what it is?
The committee requests the chair, the chairperson of the committee to ask the chairman of the committee that Senate Bill 361 is in to request a subsequent referral and then to ask the president of the Senate the same thing.
Okay.
Not very artfully said.
Clerk, call the roll.
Carson?
Aye.
Sifori?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
Wire?
Aye.
Betty Rabbit?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
Diane, will you take care of that?
We're drafting a letter?
Yes. Right away, because it's coming up tomorrow. It has to be done before 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
What's
right.
coming up? What's coming up tomorrow?
361.
Coming up where?
In Braden Economic.
Oh, you're
a
on that committee
draft.
Too.
Can I clarify to whom the letter is to be addressed?
Mike Thorne.
To Mike Thorne, okay.
2281.
You're going to give me time, Irishman. Chris.
Probably my name should not show in the letter, or he won't do anything with that letter.
Well, let's.
Which are
Thorne or Michael Esquire.
If somebody wanted to be heard on that. Glenn Patterson, who isn't here. Let's go to 2259.
Part of the bill on Nantucket again was the general process.
Diana, are there any amendments needed to 2259?
No, Madam Chairman.
Is there a motion on the bill?
Let me check which one it is.
Yeah. Madam Chairman, somewhere in here, and I don't have it on this bill, there was the work product problem.
Which bill, Laird?
Is that 28 to 58?
That would be 2259.
2259? Can you identify it for Laird?
Section 2, subsection 4, this is the first.
Okay, thank you. It's the bottom of some page, I thought, but...
Two, bottom of page two.
Yeah. Yes. Madam Chairman, the concern I have, I think I mentioned it to Laird, I've talked with a number of attorneys about this, and one concern was the potential. I realize this is subject to court, I suppose, but I'm concerned about that the lethargic lawyer letting the industrious lawyer build the case and then coming in and asking for a disclosure of the work that he has built for the trial. I grant you it says upon a showing the party seeking as a substantial need, and I assume that can be shown, and that he's unable without undue hardship to obtain the substantial equivalent of the materials. I just think that's overbroad. So I'll move the elimination of bottom of page 2 and top of page 3, and I suppose I have to do it two ways. I guess I'll have to do it conceptually, and that is that I don't want this bill to apply to documents or tangible things prepared in anticipation of litigation or for trial. And I can't just eliminate 4 without getting into trouble, can I? Because 4 is really, paragraph 4 is intended to provide a safeguard of the court.
Actually, it was the intention of the bar committee that this is even provides even more protection than the existing case law. This amendment codifies existing case law and actually probably provides a little more protection than the disclosure of that from the existing case law. Mm-hmm.
258.7.
The sentence why at the top of page 3, in ordering discovery of such materials, the court shall protect against disclosure of mental impressions, conclusions, mm-hmm. opinions, or legal theories. I'd add, or research of an attorney. Legal theories or legal research.
Well, it's not really the legal research so much as the testing that's been done, and that's what precisely this is designed to get at, I think. Could I ask
sure.
Bill, you do this, don't you, the discovery bit? Do you think that's a problem with the letting you build your case and letting the plaintiff's counsel come in and see what tests you've run?
Yes, I think what you said before, I'm not familiar with the bill, but I think certainly that if I am an industrious lawyer and do a lot of discovery, that if I understand this correctly, by a motion to get that discovery so that you can look at it on the other side, I think that's a lazy way for a lawyer to do it. I think that in this state, unless you adopt the federal rules where you have complete discovery, which we don't have, which has been voted down before, and the bar is split on this too. I don't think that should be permitted.
That's Laird.
I think it could be eliminated and just have that be a matter of case law. That's what it is now. There's no Oregon statute that this is modifying. It's just not covered. It could just be a matter of case law and let the courts provide the protection. It's the work product doctrine. I suppose the courts could just work it out on their own. They could just delete that section.
Is it your motion to delete subsection 4?
Well, my only problem is that we're, and that's really the question, I want to protect the work product, and I don't know whether I can do it by just eliminating 4, because 4 is a safeguard, as Laird has indicated, and you remove the safeguard and you don't tinker with the top, you really have opened it up. Follow me?
Except to the extent that the courts continue to apply their existing work product doctrine.
Yeah, but what this does is I think, my understanding is this broadens the case law in discovery in Oregon.
Well,
generally.
Well, actually, this part was intended to
no.
narrow it.
Okay. But section 2, 2-1A, broadens the discovery in Oregon. Then four is intended to narrow it back down in the area of work products. If we repeal only four, we're left with a broadening without any break. So I think I'd have to do both. I think I'd have to remove four and then make an exemption from one. Follow me? Would you agree that it, not with what I'm doing, but to accomplish what I want to do, I would have to make two jumps, and that's eliminate paragraph four and put an exception up in the produce and permit of 1A, a specific exemption on work product. This does not apply to work product or something like that.
And to just eliminate any discovery of this, regardless of the work product,
Is that your motion then, Wallace?
Yeah, I'm not as well prepared as I should be, and I apologize to Laird and the committee for that. I think I'd like to try that and see where it goes, and that is put an exemption to work product in the, and you can borrow the language out of here. In effect, the motion, Madam Chairman, would be to delete lines 30 to 35 on page 2 and 1 through 4 on page 3, and then somewhere in section 2 provide that work product is not, and we can use the same language here, documents and tangible things prepared in anticipation of litigation or for trial shall not be subject to.
Well, wouldn't it be easier just to leave that and then make the exception?
To leave in four and then make
the exception, but that does not mean.
Well, four is the, see, what they've done is the, I'll say my conception is they broaden the discovery. Recognizing there is some sensitivity in the area of work product, they've made a special break in work product, and you have to have a special showing and all this sort of stuff. And I just don't want them to get at the work product.
I know. So if you make that exception, this does not include work product.
Right.
Couldn't you just, instead of making complex amendments, leave it, but then exclude?
Well, if you say it, if it doesn't include work product, you don't need the break. Because work product's not included.
Diane, do you have the amendment?
Well, deleting subsection 4 and adding that language up in subsection 1A, section 2. Is that still where we are?
Somewhere in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask a question. Lawyer, are what you, is what you're trying to do an attempt to clarify or change policy? Because as I understand it, work product is not discoverable. And what you're trying to do is just to nail down what that means, or are you trying to say that there are some other things besides what's traditionally thought of as work product that ought not to be discoverable?
No, my understanding, work product, Laird and I haven't looked at it for some time, that's why I asked Phil's help, because my present understanding is that it's not as broad as I read what you're saying on case law. There is no statute on it. I'm worried that this bill opens it up substantially, and we could argue whether it does that. I want to protect work product so that it's not discoverable. There may be some extraordinary circumstances, but I don't care to spend the time writing that down. If I had to make a choice, I'd say it's just not discoverable, period. And Laird's concern is that that's rolling back some of the case law, but we're making a broad discovery provision here, and I just don't want work product.
Okay, but
be discoverable, I guess. I'm not really that harsh, but if I have to blow hot and cold, I'll blow on the side of not making it discoverable.
Are you clear on the amendment? Is there a discussion?
I'd like Laird to react to that.
Laird?
Well, under the law of almost all all the federal states, all the federal law, and most states do allow it to be discovered on the showing of exceptional circumstances. Either it's worded good cause, or it's, it uses the federal language of substantial need and undue hardship. It's just a way of defining it. But generally, it's viewed as a qualified immunity, so most states allow it, as Senator Carson indicates, if there's a real need for it. So the bar, the current Oregon law is you can get it if there's good cause. That's the State versus Bryson, the Bryson case versus Southern Pacific establishes that. You can get it on a good cause, and this simply attempts to define a little bit more carefully what, that it has to be more than just good cause, it has to be substantial need, and there'll be undue hardship. So I think it was the feeling of the persons involved in the drafting that this, if anything, gives more protection than current Oregon case law with regard to work product. And I think the bar might have some reservations about allowing any work product to be discovered, even if there's an exceptional need for it.
Further discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Steve objects. Let's see, that still passes. Betty votes in favor of the motion.
Well, that...
She gave me instructions before she went.
Okay. Okay, we still needed five to get the bill out.
Well, I guess we better wait for Betty to come back. Get Betty, will you, please?
We set that we're going to be meeting tomorrow, aren't we? Larry's getting awful tired driving up and down, but I don't know that he needs to be here for that. I think the issue is clear. He's raised a good point. I've not looked at it, but, and I guess I'd better read State versus Bryson, because we talked about it the other day in transportation. That's when they gave them the standards for railroad crossings or something, wasn't it?
Well, I think that I'm not going to be able to be here tomorrow. So we'll have to put it over till Monday if we're going to put it over.
Well, I don't want this thing to get all chewed up on the floor, and it's not my intent to take us back in the dark ages, but I've read this and read it entirely different than Laird reads it. And I want to give substantial margin for my ignorance. And I'd like an opportunity to read that bill, but...
All right, is that all right with you, Laird, if we put it over till next week?
I could meet with Senator Carson perhaps afterwards, and we could see if there's some way to deal with that problem, so that certainly the bar doesn't want to create an open-ended discovery of work product, and that wasn't the intention of the bill. I think perhaps we could talk it over another time.
Yeah. Okay. We can do it by phone if we don't do it 7:02.
The Subcommittee on the Inheritance Tax met today, and some changes were made in the bill, and we'd like to get it engrossed because it's going to have to go to a conference committee. I would assume that. Senator Smith, do you want to report on it?
At least the first 17 amendments.
We adopted, 20 or 22 amendments. The major substantive change that the subcommittee made in the bill that the House passed was a phase down of the inheritance tax over a 10-year basis in the state five bienniums by raising the exemption from $50,000, which it is in the bill, finally to the top limit, just phasing out inheritance tax to about $12 million, which is the offset allowed by the federal inheritance tax. So it's really a phase down, not a phase out. And the language is being drafted, which will carry both the gift and inheritance tax in that phase-out program.
Excuse me. Do you mean that the federal estate tax is giving a progressively greater credit for state taxes paid?
There is a credit for state taxes paid.
Which will be getting larger every year.
Which is about $12 million now. So there won't be a phase out. There'll be a phase down to that
figure.
That figure.
I see.
Oregonians, when it's all in 10 years from now, Oregonians will have to pay the so-called pickup tax.
Pickup tax, yeah.
But no state tax. I mean, the pickup tax comes to us, but that's the tax that you're able to write off your federal estate tax if you paid it locally. So we say whatever that figure is, you pay it locally, and it comes to us rather than going to the Fed.
Locally payable federal.
Right.
That's the effect.
There's no fiscal impact in this bill because at 12%, the bill will raise about $1.4 million in this biennium, but we began the phase-out January 1, 1979, and in the following bienniums, there will be approximately an $8 million impact to the general fund each biennium. That will be mitigated by what is called the Free Start Program initiated by the federal government in December of 1976, which provides that the basis of all property will be current value at that time, which means that rather than getting a capital gains, which you ordinarily would have had, you will be paying a larger income tax on that gain if you sell.
You don't get a new base.
You don't get a new base.
As a result of inheritance.
So you will have
a base. If you, on property that you own prior to December, as of December 31, 76, that's your base. And if you die 20 years from now, you go back to December 31, not the date of death, for the purposes of computing capital gain.
Therefore, there's more taxable on
therefore,
income side.
All appreciation substantially increase your income.
Survivors who inherit property
on the original basis. Tax.
If the state sells it, heavy capital gains. If it's transferred on to the
Smith?
Beneficiary, then when they sell it, they go back to December 31 base. And rather than to say if the person dies in 85, you don't go back to February 9th, 85 for the base. If the asset was owned, you go clear back to the December 31 base. So substantially greater, assuming we continue on our inflationary spiral, although I thought FEMA was going to take care of that, but it doesn't appear to be cycling down much.
But that's a federal law.
I got that.
Yes.
Yes.
Have impact on state income.
But it does have
an impact on state
income. Well, that's Betty's candidate.
Yes, and that's my advice on it. I did talk about the tax rebate.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot.
I think it's an important bill that should move along. How does the committee feel about the subcommittee report?
I move to adopt it.
Motion is to adopt it. Is there any discussion?
Well, Madam Chairman, I'd like to do that. I did promise Senator Cook, since he couldn't attend the subcommittee meeting, that he would be here when we propose the subcommittee report. So I'd really ask that the committee allow us to go ahead and print the bill as the subcommittee brought it and let Senator Cook have his day in court when it comes back, if that's all right.
All right, but Senator Cook has not been in regular attendance, so I think we'll have to give him one try at it, and if he doesn't make it, let the bill go. Diana?
We were going to do a legislative council engrossment, or did you want the full printed final engrossment?
We want a printed engrossed.
Okay, and not
we changed the signals, yeah. We want a printed engrossed bill.
Is there any objection to that? So ordered then.
So we go to 2258 or?
2258, right. Diana, are there any amendments to 2258?
No, Madam Chairman.
I'll move it.
Senator Carson moves 2258 out, do pass. Is there discussion?
Subject?
Diana, do you want to briefly?
Yeah, this is a bar bill, and it amends our existing request for admission statutes, ORS 41625, to allow a party to request admissions of fact as well as request admission as to the genuineness of the document. And, it's hoped that the bill will encourage parties to stipulate to facts, thereby saving time at trial.
Any more explanation? Well, does that explain it for you?
Yes.
Further discussion? Clerk, call roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Tafori.
Sorry.
Aye.
Smith.
No.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. The bill passes. What's the committee's pleasure? Do you want to tackle interrogatories or not? I have an amendment. No? All right.
I don't.
We can tackle it, but I don't vote no.
Okay. Senate Bill 511.
Here's Hannah.
Oh, here's Mr. Patterson.
Madam Chairman, there is in your work packet a rewrite of Senate Bill 511. You'll see both amendments and underneath it a rewrite of the bill. And the person who rewrote this bill is here with us, Gary Roberts. He's also the major proponent of this bill.
On the rewrite of the bill, there's one typo, and that's on the second line on page one of the rewrite, second line of section two, the ORS, it's 19.170, and it should be 29. The one should be changed to 29.170. The only other change that I would suggest to the rewrite...
You want to explain your rewrite, please?
Yes. There are substantial discussions with the groups involved, which are the banks, which would be doing having the primary burden of this, so that they could handle it, and they've agreed to this, and also the sheriffs, who would be doing some of the noticing, and they also have agreed to this. Section 2 of the bill just provides that in all forms of executions, other than wage garnishments, a notice be given to the judgment debtor, indicating that the execution has occurred, a list of the property taken, a list of the property which is exempt from execution under state or federal law so that the debtor is notified. Many debtors don't realize that, say, Social Security benefits are exempt from attachment, and an explanation of how a person would go to court to take advantage of this exemption procedure.
That's all,
that's all that Section 2, subsections 1 and 2 of 2. Subsection 3 says that the banks shall be delivered this notice by the sheriff, and the sheriff serves a writ of garnishment, and the banks will send that out to the judgment debtor if an account is found there. That is what the banks are presently doing, and they do it because for two reasons. One, it's good public relations for the bank, and number two, it's a good idea to inform their account holder if the account is being garnished. So they have, this is no extra increase in their burden, it's just making it a statutory duty as opposed to a duty they've done all along anyway, and they've agreed to it. When the one change that was made substantively to this proposal that you have before you is a rewrite, and I've given one copy to Diane and I have copies for the rest of the committee, which would make it clear that the banks don't have to give this notice until they don't have to mail this notice out to the judgment debtor until they agree the account is there in their bank. In other words, the way it was originally drafted, there's a concern, legitimately, we just didn't quite draft it tightly enough, that they would have to mail this notice out even if their investigation found that they didn't have an account at that bank. And so I propose on line 10 to make it clearer that the notice doesn't have to be sent out to the person who's found.
So
Subsection 4 of the bill simply codifies what basically is done now, although every once in a while we have a weird decision where a judge doesn't agree, and that is that those funds which are exempt from execution, Social Security payments, welfare checks, unemployment checks, once they're put into a bank account, so long as the judgment debtor can identify the source as being from an exempt source, they remain exempt. And as I testified at the hearing, plenty of Social Security people come to us, they get to put their money in the bank account so they can pay their bills by check, and then a creditor can attach it. And then it's a problem every once in a while that a judge says, well, now that it's in the bank account, it's no longer exempt. And that, I think, is bad public policy. People ought to be free to put their money in the account.
Senator Carson.
Obviously, though, when you drop it into, it depends whether you go LIFO or FIFO or whatever form you use, but let's say it's a husband and wife situation, dropped into a joint bank account. Isn't that instantaneous commingling? Let's say one check is written on it. Doesn't that pretty much put an end to any proof by the judgment debtor that that $172 is the last $172 and it has to go down to $172? I can see all that accounting argument. Your case is clear. We have a single person and it goes in and it's a change in form and not in substance, really. But in the case I give you, it's instant commingling, not with other assets necessarily of the debtor, but with assets of a non-debtor.
That's why on page 3 it puts the burden on the debtor to prove that those are funds that are exempt.
Okay, but how do you, my point is, how do you prove it? What kind of, let's say you're the lawyer for the judgment debtor, what proof would you expect the court to buy that $175 you put in last Thursday is not now so commingled with the $200 that was in there
I think in situations, quite frankly, where there are two sources, that they're probably not going to be able to prove it. And so all this bill does is protect those people who've got clearly exempt resources that they can prove. And admittedly, it doesn't go all the way, maybe, but in terms of administrative efficiency, that's about as far as we can go. I think you're right.
I understand. The banks agree with you on
yes.
this amendment.
I just hope it's not misleading anybody, because I think it will work. But it's going to be extremely difficult if there are any subsequent transactions for the debtor to be able to prove that his $172 or whatever has remained intact in that fund. The checks have come out of other funds. And
well, it can't be any worse, I guess.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We've got nowhere to go but to improve.
Put
now.
Up, yeah. Okay.
Further discussion. Is there a motion on the amendments?
Both amendments.
Diana.
Before we do, could I clarify something on this new handwritten amendment, which actually will be in new subsection 3. It currently reads, a writ is served on a bank, trust company, or savings and loan association. Those people are the garnishees.
Yes.
Could we put in a phrase, served on the bank, trust company, or savings and loan association as garnishee, and then the sheriff shall deliver the copies and notice required by subsection 1 to such garnishee. And then if the garnishee has property of the judgment debtor, the garnishee shall promptly mail or deliver the copies and notice to the judgment debtor, because it just says shall deliver them, and it's not clear what that refers to. Just some rewording.
You have the amendments. Is there a discussion? Is there any objection? Amendments passed. Who's the bill out? Who passed 511 as amended?
Madam Chairman, could I ask a question I guess it would be a Tom Mahoney question. There is a bill in here that the bar put in that rested at 3-3, and it was on something to do with judgment debtors, and about 2208 or something like that.
I thought this was it, and he got together with the banks and worked out their problems. If there's another one, is there another one, Diana? Is there a hospital?
It has to do with, I'm trying to hold Gary up and see if he has any feel on it, because he's going to leave here in a minute, I fear. Are you going to leave in a minute?
Not now.
Okay. I'll find it. Talk to him about it.
Okay.
Lou Hampton called me, and I'm just trying to figure out. I wasn't here when the vote was.
Motion is to pass on the bill. Is there a discussion?
Is that to add legal and equitable interest?
Yes.
What can be
2207.
Yeah.
2207.
No, it wasn't 2207.
2208, something like that.
It must have been 2208. Yes, I know there was that one, and it was a close vote. I think it was missing only one.
All right, clerk, call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Harrison.
Aye.
Yes, yeah, add equitable.
Safari.
Aye.
That was it.
Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. House Bill 2281.
I'll be with you in a minute, Jim.
Opposed to this, which you'll find in the work packet submitted by Glenn Patterson. It's in a series of things. It's behind the Oregon Bureau of Labor letter, sort of in the middle of that.
What is the amendment?
The amendment would go in on page 2, line 18, subparagraph A. Currently that section reads, however, discrimination is not an unlawful employment practice if such discrimination results from a bona fide occupational requirement reasonably necessary to the normal operation of the employer's business. Mr. Patterson's amendment would put a comma after the word business and would say, or from, if, so it would read, if such discrimination results from a bona fide occupational requirement reasonably necessary to the normal operation of the employer's business, or from a requirement by a bona fide church or sectarian religious institution, including but not limited to a school, hospital, or church camp that employs, that employees.
I think we found it.
Okay.
Now, has everybody found the amendment? Is there any discussion of the amendment? Chair would move the amendment. Is there any objection?
I'm going to.
Steve?
Yeah, I've been trying to find this bill and make sure exactly where this amendment fits in.
It fits in right here.
Okay. The thrust of the amendment, I gather, is to permit religious organizations to prefer members of their own denomination in their various activities.
Steve?
Yeah, this does not say it's all right for churches to discriminate on the basis of marital status, age, race, religion, or religion, I understand, the color, sex, national origins, other things. It's only on the issue of religion, is that right?
Yes.
And be private behavior things?
Yes.
May I respond, Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I'm Glenn E. Patterson with the Seventh Adventist Church Department of Public Affairs Northwest Headquarters. And Senator Kifori, this would make it so that the church could require that their teachers, for instance, in the school, must abide by the tenets of the church in their teaching of the program of the church. This has nothing to do with if they run a box factory or some other.
Now, I understand that. I'm just curious as to what this amendment amends, and it does not amend, I don't think, marital status, age, race, color, sex, national origin, or marital status.
Except as there might be in the marital status that part that would deal with if a man was divorced his wife, and he was, say, the dean of boys in the school, he would
didn't allow divorce in your church.
He would be dismissed because that's a tenet of the church. That's the only way they would have any effect. That answer your question?
Yeah, I understand.
Is there any objection to the amendment? Senator Brown.
Senator Patterson, under this amendment, would it require church membership, or in the alternative, would a conduct not incompatible with the church tenets be adequate? Or are you going to require one or both?
I don't know that I understand your question.
In other words, would a person have to be a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, or could he just conduct himself in a manner not incompatible with the church's beliefs?
I don't know that the amendment really states that.
She says that he must.
It says,
must be of a particular persuasion or conduct themselves in a manner compatible.
I think the law already makes provision that they can discriminate as to a certain persuasion. If you say if it was a Catholic church, they could presume to hire a Catholic to teach the Catholic doctrine. That
right.
Would be, and that, that I think is already in here, and this doesn't alter that.
Thank you.
Is there objection to the amendment?
Could I ask?
Yes.
There's a question too. Glenn, you've also included hospital.
Right.
Not limited to a school, hospital, or church camp. So it really and truly is a lot of activities that the church is engaged
right.
in.
The church's regular activity, that's right.
So would this mean the right of a doctor to perform, to be admitted to practice in your hospital?
I suppose it might be so interpreted. That was not the intent, however.
Or all of the employees. You have some fantastically large institutions.
Sex discriminator, race discriminator.
Particularly in hospitals and things of that sort, where you have to hire many nurses and other people.
Further questions?
May I note on number two, the employment involved is closely connected with or related to the primary purpose of the church or institution and is not connected with a commercial or business activity which has no necessary relationship to the church or institution. I think we take care of the question that you raised there.
All right, for example, so you have a doctor on your staff and that doctor is divorced. Would that exception come under two?
I would think so.
Yes.
Because it would be not related as any, as I could see it anyway.
If he were the chaplain
if
of your
the
hospital,
chief staff, that'd be a different matter.
Okay.
Further discussion. Clerk, call roll on the amendment.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Kokori.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. What's your pleasure with the bill?
Is this my chance?
Oh.
Never mind. Wait a minute.
Wait,
Madam Chairman, hold it.
Wait a minute. What's going on?
Is that nepotism?
Okay.
Nepotism.
Isn't this the bill we want to put nepotism in? I know the other bill's passed.
Well, you did mention that to me, and you did ask me to let me know.
Well, the other bill is out. Is it going to pass the House?
It's out of committee.
Amended. I'm not sure.
You're satisfied with it, the other bill? This is the last chance to get nepotism in over here.
What is it?
I think.
State your name, please.
John Wolf, Bureau of Labor. I believe during the original hearing on this bill, there was some discussion that on the House side, marital status was not included in the policy statement section of the statute, and that was an oversight. And the Bureau and I think the Women's Rights Coalition would like to see that marital status is included in 659, 020, and 022. Would require two new sections and a renumbering.
Well, wait a minute, Madam Chairman. We're not, but I'm talking about the where two persons in a family, and I think we agree that marital status doesn't get it then.
Correct. 2662 is out of committee. It's been amended. The amendments have not been printed up for distribution yet. So I really can't be specifically responsive to your question as to whether or not we're satisfied with it or if the coalition is satisfied.
Do you have any amendment to offer for this?
Other than that, other than the suggestion for 020 and 022 in the policy statements.
Well, let me ask Mary a question.
Mary?
Does what John has proposed take care of the concerns that we had in the other bill on the nepotism? All right. Do you want to put in this bill a provision on nepotism that's in the other bill in the House? And if so, come in. If so, do you have the other bill or language of the other bill? Can we see it from you?
Sure, for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Do for you.
Go ahead and put some in. No.
What can we do for you?
I mean,
language.
Well,
I'll do that pretty good. That one.
Oh, here's Bob.
Madam Chairman, I want to propose an amendment to this bill, and I'll read it to you. Notwithstanding subsection 1 of this section, which is 3670, it shall not be an unlawful sex distinction, discrimination, or restriction for a place of public accommodation to employ bona fide promotional or advertising practices, for such practices are neither calculated to nor have the effect of discouraging or denying to an individual, because of that individual's sex, the full acquisition or use of all of the accommodations, advantages, facilities, or privileges offered by such place of public accommodation.
Well, what does it mean?
Let's call Pacelli's time to fix something.
This is Jim Bredin's language, Madam Chairman, and it's guaranteed to be either constitutional or unconstitutional. What it does is to allow Les Schwab to continue to change ladies' tires without charge, or
I thought that bill failed.
It would allow a movie theater, for instance, to charge less for women on special days than it does for men.
Well, would it also allow Les Schwab to charge women and to change tires for men free?
Mm-hmm. If you wanted to, yeah. It would. I don't think they'd get too far with it. I think the marketplace might restrain them. But I just think we ought to do a little something for the ladies.
Have you seen some of the ladies change tires? Have you seen the mechanics out at Mount Hood Community College, for example?
No.
Joey Smith, the rhododendron, who drives the local.
I really don't think the amendment hurts anybody, and it sure helps a whole bunch of little ladies. Little old ladies.
You've heard the motion, discussion? Clerk, call and roll on the motion.
If you include Multnomah Athletic
Carson,
Club, and Iron Club, and
here.
And University Club, I'll go for.
What are we voting on now, ma'am?
Bob's amendment, Les Schwab tires, changing it for women.
W. Oh, Brown.
My.
What?
Voting now?
Carson.
Oh, boy. what was your amendment? Can we just run that last rule backwards and I'll just
let him read it? Yeah.
Well, what we're doing is adding a new section to the A. and Gross House Bill 2281.
Just hand it to him.
Amend
so
ORS 30.670 to add this language to 3670.
Would that authorize father and son's name at the school?
I want to propose this amendment.
No, just promotion.
Okay.
No, promotion or advertising.
Three names, father and son. Flowers with ladies. ladies' night at the local tab.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Ladies' night day at the baseball game.
That's the West Shore American
tradition. American tradition.
That's buried in there somewhere.
That's Jim Redden's version.
Well, that's another one of his generous opinions.
We used to call it the West Schwab Tire Bill. Now we call it Jim Redden Surround. The Indians with the wagons.
Boy, it's own mother wouldn't know, would it?
That's what you hired orders for, I guess. Pretty definite.
Yeah, that's all America right there.
I think you got a Durham
brother.
Hi. Safari?
No.
Mitch?
Aye.
Betty Roberts?
No.
Madam Chairman?
No.
I don't think women ought to have any greater advantages than men. They have enough already. If you guys would get with it, you'd have some equal opportunities with us.
We'll bring that up at the men's caucus meeting.
Right, Betty wants to move this amendment.
I wish Vern Cook were here. We'd have a minority report.
Her amendment is, it is an unlawful employment practice for an employer to refuse to hire an individual solely because another member of that individual's family presently works for the employer. A violation is a fine of $1,000.
Who's amendment?
Betty.
You want to talk to your amendment?
This is House Bill 2662, which has been... What's been the history of it? Did they have a hearing over it, Mary, in the House?
Yes, it was just passed out today with amendments.
With amendments, but she doesn't know what the amendments are, and I have some people particularly up around the Dallas area, who wanted to come to be heard on this if we put it in the bill and would support it because of the situation in which husbands and wives are very regularly being employed in the same occupation, though not in the same profession, being hired in the same business, but not necessarily in the same type work, which is becoming more common because of more women going to school, higher education, being trained in the same kinds of work that the man is being trained in, and they're moving into those kinds of fields. It's very logical, particularly in small communities where in this particular case, in the Dallas, it's in the Dallas Hospital, where the husband was the director of physical therapy and the wife was a physical therapist. And the hospital has the policy of not hiring two people in from the same family. In related work. Now, if she wanted to go to the laundry, that was okay. She hadn't been trained to do laundry work except at home. If she wanted to cook, that was okay, but she couldn't be in the same position that was comparable to the husband's position or in which they may have some daily contact and working with the same people. There was also another incident in the Dallas of the same nature. This is not unusual in school districts, and for what reason, I don't know, but I can understand it in banks where there might be the element of possibility of collusion and embezzlement, that sort of thing. But it's just unrealistic for businesses to take this sort of an attitude when we're finding husbands and wives by natural process being interested in the same type of work. And but this policy is very detrimental to those kinds of situations. And of course, it could be father son, it could be mother daughter, it could be mother son, whatever. And I think that it's important that this be somehow or other put through the legislature. If your House bill is okay, we don't need to put it in here. But if it's not, I'd like to see it put into this bill.
Discussion of the amendment, Steve?
Yeah, I'm concerned about the worries of the folks who've been working on this bill for a long time. Would we have a problem with concurrence on that amendment?
It's a little unclear as to what the reaction will be to 2662 as amended, especially since I don't know how it's been amended yet. I will point out that 2662, as you have it before you, provides for a civil penalty and does not really fit in under Bureau of Labor jurisdiction. And basically, 2281 deals exclusively with the Bureau of Labor's jurisdiction over civil rights cases. We would not have jurisdiction as that bill is currently drafted because it provides for civil penalty only.
Madam Chair, I would like to go just a little bit further. I had handled both these cases out of the Dalles, and we went through the Labor Commissioner's office. They indicated that there was no basis upon which they could proceed. Then we went through the EEOC, and after a long period of time of investigation, I had briefs on nepotism and everything else under the sun. In my file that was sent to me for analysis of it, and I did have another attorney, it was their opinion that this is not covered under Title VII, I guess it is, of the federal legislation in prohibiting discrimination, and to have then a right of recovery for damages either through the Labor Commissioner's office or through the EEOC or in a court. We were prepared to go to court and tested on constitutional grounds, but that was the only recourse that we had, and because the federal district courts, we can't find a single case in a federal district court. There have been a number of cases go up, but they have not used the Constitution to protect this sort of discrimination, and their federal law doesn't protect it, so there's no law. At least we could protect it in Oregon if this were passed and let it go to court under the statute.
Do you want to delete the penalty and just move the first part so that it's consistent with the bill?
I'd like to play. John, what's your reaction to placing it in the Bureau?
Philosophically, I would say we have no problem at all. We certainly support the idea behind 2662 anyway. Of course, I'm looking at it from a practical matter of not having a reading yet. If we could get concurrence on this, I just don't know.
Well, I would move this proposal, but with an additional insert, so that it would read, it is an unlawful employment practice for an employer to refuse to hire or terminate the employment of an individual solely because another member of that individual's family presently works for that employer.
And you're moving the penalty, just that one sentence.
And remove everything else so that it would come under the employment division, which then it would operate as all of the other discrimination statutes. Is that right, John?
Yeah, I think you'll have to put it in under what are unlawful employment practices, making a new subsection under 030.
And then that would give your office the authority to investigate.
Hey, that's neat. That means we can always hire our secretary, our wives as our secretary.
I haven't thinking about that.
Is there discussion of the motion?
Sanctioned.
You can't anyway.
Yeah, but that's going to go out the window, I think. Sure.
Well, and this says that you could.
This won't affect you because it'll be a rule change in the Constitution to the legislature makes its own rules.
I'd prefer that
this
be not treated differently than any of the other discrimination provisions and put it under the Labor Commission so that they can take the initial responsibility for investigation, and then if they refuse it, it can then go back into the court if they can't resolve it.
Is there an objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is adopted. What's your pleasure with the bill?
Move it out to pass.
To pass as amended. Diana?
Can I get a clarification on the very first amendment, which was proposed to add 659020 and 659022 to the bill as amended to include a reference to marital status? Is that amendment adopted?
Yes. On the bill, then, if there's no discussion, just a minute.
I'm sorry. On page 4, there is being, for the first time, a statute of limitations added. And there was a question raised in committee last at hearing as to whether or not we should have an absolute 1 year, because sometimes it's difficult to discover the fact that there was an unlawful employment practice. And in our other statute of limitations, we often use language was discovered or should have been discovered.
and I didn't know if you wanted.
Wally?
I'd resist that. I agree with Diana that we've done that in some cases of fraud and some of the other areas, but I really think we ought to have a curtain down time. When it just comes down, it should have been discovered.
Quick call the roll on the bill.
I'll go.
Debbie Brown.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
I'd like to move to delete the statute of limitations.
Motion is to delete the statute of limitations. Discussion of that. Clerk, call the roll.
Let me make one statement. I think employees may feel that there's discrimination, but it may take an evolving process, the passage of time, before they're finally convinced that that is what is the problem. And I think that in these areas, this discrimination can be so subtle and so surreptitious that it's hard to establish when it occurred. And if that ever could be established, I'm sure that in many cases a one-year statute of limitation would bar the action. So I'd like to move the delete.
Clerk, call the roll.
Debbie Brown.
Aye.
Carrickson.
No.
Kampori.
No.
Betty Roberts.
No.
Madam Chairman.
No. Are there further amendments proposed? The motion is to pass. Clerk, call the roll on the bill.
Debbie Brown.
Aye.
Carrickson.
Aye.
Kampori.
Aye.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. We have Senate Bill 191, which limits the rights of reverter. We did a waltz with this one time, and I don't care to go through that again.
Yes, I was testifying.
Bill, what are you in here for?
Is there anybody?
Bill, what are you in here for? What are you in here for?
I was on 96.
Madam Chairman,
yes,
watching the Zoom. Just enjoying the show now.
I've submitted a letter to the committee with a proposed amendment.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that before the committee, if that amendment is required to get the bill out of this committee, then the Bar Committee on Real Property proposes the amendment. If there's any chance to get it out without the amendment, we just assume not have it. But having the amendment is better than not having the legislation. The proposed amendment eliminates conveyance of the state of Oregon into nonprofit corporations.
Say that again, please.
I submit this amendment. It's the consensus of the Bar Committee on Real
Property. Right, I didn't mean all that. Just what the amendment says.
The amendment eliminates from the scope of this proposed legislation conveyances to municipal or governmental bodies as defined by the sections cited of ORS, and also nonprofit corporations as they're defined under Chapter 61, as long as they maintain their nonprofit status. And if they come out of their nonprofit status, then they would be treated like an existing conveyance today under Section 2 of the Act. In other words, they'd have two years to file the notice, and then the right of reverter would expire after 30 years.
Just to get things going, I'll move as is, Chairman. If that fails, then I'll move these amendments and move it again.
Move it as is. All right. Discussion of
yep.
As is.
My concern, of course, is that grants to municipalities, like in the case in Klamath Falls, the library case, or grants to churches or Girl Scout organizations, those grants should be honored and those titles protected.
I think I'm going to lose my motion, Walt. So.
Wally, under your motion, the park in Portland could revert
to Portland
and be changed
to
property.
Yeah, to a skyscraper.
And this amendment would prevent that. Is that correct?
If yes. Not, I'm not moving the amendment if I fail on this. Yes.
This is the motion on the bill, as is.
Well, I don't know that it would affect it. Did Portland come from a Yeah, it would, because it's...
Any conveyances already made, existing today, to a governmental unit such as City of Portland, can be renewed indefinitely.
Any conveyances to anyone...
Today.
...with rights to revert, or as they exist today, can be renewed indefinitely.
Yeah, we're talking about one where all the errors are gone.
And then the bill...
Any person interested, just one heir can do it, the way the bill is presently written. Just one person interested in the property.
Yeah, but it has to be a proprietary interest as opposed to a social interest.
Yes.
Clerk, call the roll.
I have equitable servitude. Is that
Debbie Brown?
No.
Very same form.
Harrison?
Aye, it's one of their subsidiaries. Aye.
Tafari?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
Roberts?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. That's four, isn't it? It doesn't pass.
It's an amendment.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, I just...
Sorry, sir. Now you move the amendment?
If I move the amendment, would I pick up one, or... I'll move the amendment.
The amendment is moved. Is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, the amendment is adopted. Senator Carson moves the bill out and do pass as amended.
Well, we were trying to put a light rail system between Portland and Oregon City. That's our hope. Now, there were grants there by property owners to the Portland Traction Company. If this goes through, they can keep those alive.
If they take positive action.
They take positive action. They don't take positive action in 30 years.
They
will lapse. The Portland Traction Company can be sold off.
Right.
Fee simple absolute, and the possibility of ever using that right away is going to...
2 years if it's over.
If it exists, I believe before January 1, 1978, positive action needs to be taken within 2 years or it expires 28 years later.
No. Florida has a comparable provision, but it has public utilities included in with the nonprofit.
I've looked at the Florida Act, but it's been quite a while. I don't remember what exactly was in it.
Conceptually, I'd like to move to amend the amendment to provide public utilities. Right. Except out the grants that have been made public utilities.
The effect of that amendment would be then, let me clarify, if the grant of property is made to a public utility like a public railroad, then there can be no automatic, there will be perpetual. That would be saying?
That means that that would not revert after a period of time. It could be sold by the public utility.
Doesn't that undo my Lane County situation?
Yes, it would undo the Lane County.
I've tried to ascertain whether there were any of that character. Do you think it's going to hurt?
It's
going to
undo it.
In Lane County, are the railroads trying to sell that to Lane County?
Yes, they'd like to
for
be able
purposes.
To abandon it for a bicycle path, yeah.
Okay, I'll withdraw the amendment.
The motion is do pass as amended. Clerk, call the roll.
Debbie Brown.
Aye.
Harrison.
Aye.
Tafari.
Aye.
Smith.
No.
Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. The bill passes.
Madam Chairman, I reacted on one of those groups of the three Wicked Sisters that came in 52, 57, 8, 9, 57. Laird had an amendment that provision that you'd go to the court to click in 2257. In other words, have you seen that, Betty?
No.
Well, the question was, would we like to discuss it, and at some maybe the next meeting we'd have copies of those amendments. But what it amounted to is if you go to the court to convince the court that you ought to have interrogatories to establish whatever, the court could order interrogatories, 25 questions. It's intended to take some of the sting out of what some of the sphere in 2257 has written, and that was an amendment that Larry suggested, and it certainly makes it more palatable. I don't know whether it would still fly or not, but it...
Yeah, that was the amendment I intended to...
And I cut you off because I'd forgotten that he mentioned that. So maybe at the next meeting we could
Madam Chairman, could we take up 835?
What's that?
835 is a bill that would
take us... in that bill?
Pardon?
You put nepotism in that bill.
Yeah.
Wrote it right in there for us.
Hot dang doggies.
Get ready for you.
When will the Davies Big Destroyer firm finds out about that? Don't they have, they used to have a policy they couldn't hire children in that firm.
Under the age of 12 or something.
No? No?
No, no, no. You've got grandchildren and
yeah.
grandchildren.
But they're not in that firm?
Except those who were the senior partners. Then they brought in their
no?
sons.
Well, that might have changed, but I went to school with Dan Davies. And he didn't practice with
okay, Betty.
David L.
835 is a bill that would take us back to where we were in 1975 when we passed the statute that allowed CSD to take over the investigation of child abuse cases. And the experience for 2 years has been pretty poor. We had the testimony on it, and we did have Don Walsh, who testified in favor of it. We had Elmer Nasby and a bunch of those people.
Jean Dowery.
Yeah. In favor of it, and Diana has a proposed amendment for it.
What is the amendment, Diana?
Well, I propose that section one of the bill actually be amended on line 6 and 7 to restore the bracketed language as currently written, with the bracketed language remaining deleted. The report of child abuse can only be made to a law enforcement agency. Under the current law, it can be made either to CSD or the law enforcement agency.
What's the source of that amendment?
Well, it is the, Betty.
You move the amendment?
Yes, I move the amendment because it's a question of whether or not there can be a report made to the Children's Services or the agency.
Yeah,
but as soon it would be my understanding that if the report was made to the to CSD then would call in the police.
Yes, under
for
section
the police
2.
To make the investigation.
Is there any objection to the amendment? Amendment passes.
Madam Chairman, don't we need to also give Diana the latitude maybe to shore up a little bit because, for instance, I make a report to CSD now for the next section, section 2, 418-760. Upon receipt of our report required, somehow we have to have the Children's Services have a requirement to report to the law enforcement
yes.
agency.
All right.
But we've got to close that link.
Okay. Now, and then there is another provision, Madam Chairman, in Section 3 on line 33.
Is there any objection to Wally's proposed amendment? It's adopted then?
In which the state police, as you will recall, suggested that we leave the central registry with the Children's Services Division and not transfer to Oregon State Police because that's where it currently is and it shouldn't be it should not be transferred.
All right.
So we ought to leave Section 3 on line 33 as it is in the current law.
Restore the current law?
Yes. So the registry still remains with CSD.
Is there any objection? So ordered. Senator Roberts, what's your problem, Diana?
I'm just wanting to clarify that last amendment on Section 3 on line 35. We're going to delete Oregon State Police and restore
right.
the bracketed
right.
language. Are we still on page 3 then going to leave that bold-faced language? Every law enforcement agency shall forward a copy of all reports to the state registry since we're leaving the state registry with CSD?
Oh, that probably wouldn't be necessary, would it?
I don't know. Well, I think
sorry.
It would be necessary.
Would it be necessary? Yeah. Okay.
Senator Roberts moves the bill out. Do pass
Section
amended.
4 also has a reference to state police, so you have to take care of that one. So just to make it all conform.
Clerk call the roll.
Debbie Brown.
Aye.
Harrison.
Aye.
Did I do?
You said aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye.
Safari.
No.
Smith.
Aye.
Betty Rabbit.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. Bill passes. We're adjourned.